Today is February 24th, 2007, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, a Mac Observer podcast. I'm Ricky Spiro.
And I'm Jeff Gamet. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup.
The Apple-Cisco settlement and Microsoft MP3 ruling from this week's this week's Context Machine fodder. So we'll start up the machine in just a minute, but as usual, we have to start with the news.
And I think we'll start with Apple and Cisco. Apple and Cisco agreed to kiss and make up over the use of the iPhone trademark on Wednesday. The deal allows both companies to use the name for their products throughout the world, and the two sides will, in air quotes, explore opportunities for interoperability in the areas of security and consumer and enterprise communications, for whatever that means. And all the pending legal actions regarding the use of the iPhone trademark are also being dismissed. Additional terms of the agreement are not being disclosed.
Cisco filed a suit against Apple claiming trademark infringement after the announcement of the iPhone during the Macworld Expo 2007 in January. You may recall all of this. We discussed it on this show, and of course it got a lot of coverage around the world and in the mainstream media and elsewhere. Both companies had been negotiating the use of the trademark name under Cisco's control prior to Macworld Expo, but apparently Apple broke off the talk shortly before Steve Jobs' keynote address when he actually went and released the product. After Cisco filed its case against Apple, both companies returned to the negotiating table in an effort to avoid moving forward in the courtroom. The talks were extended beyond the original deadline of February 15th to February 21st earlier this week, when an agreement could not originally be reached.
Now, the deal allows both sides to move forward with their respective products. For Apple, it's the iPhone cell phone combo, and for Cisco, it's a voice over IP phone.
And incidentally, the show notes also have a link to a forum thread that we've got on this topic where a bunch of TMO readers were having a very interesting discussion on this subject.
And when you talk about Apple, for some reason Microsoft can't be far behind, so that's where we'll go next. Our other big story for the week was for a different legal battle. In this case, it was a U.S. District Court in San Diego ruling that Microsoft must pay Alcatel-Lucent $1.52 billion in damages for infringing on MP3 encoding and decoding patents. Now, should Microsoft lose an anticipated appeal on the ruling, it may mean more than a hit to the software company's bottom line. It could also mark the beginning of lawsuits against other companies that are working under the impression that they have properly licensed MP3 technology as well. The Alcatel-Lucent lawsuit started back in 2003 and originally claimed that Dell and Gateway Computer were infringing on 15 patents with technologies being used in the Windows operating system. What Microsoft did in an effort to discourage suits against companies that resell its operating system, they filed a declaratory action stating that it should be the target of a suit instead. And of course, Alcatel-Lucent bit and sued Microsoft. Microsoft argued that it properly licensed the technology for encoding audio files from Fraunhofer. The German company co-developed the technology with Bell Labs, which later became Lucent, and is now Alcatel-Lucent.
Now we can fast forward to this week's ruling, which says that, surprise, Microsoft's Windows operating system does in fact infringe on Alcatel-Lucent patents that relate to MP3 technology. A statement issued by Microsoft representatives read, "We think this verdict is completely unsupported by the law or the facts. Like hundreds of other companies, large and small, we believe that we properly licensed MP3 technology from its industry-recognized licensor, Fraunhofer." Microsoft paid $16 million to Fraunhofer in exchange for a license to use MP3 technology. Other companies have paid licensing fees to the same company and, like Microsoft, presumably assumed that they were legit in using MP3 technology. Now, that is the Context Machine fodder. As usual, the show is about the Context Machine itself, where we're going to take these two news stories that we're talking about and we're going to put them in context here. So let's just kick it off with this Cisco-Apple settlement. Jeff, the 60-second version, what did Apple get out of this?
What did Apple get? How about exactly what they want, which is exactly what I would expect for Apple? What they got was a free and clear usage of the iPhone name, which is what they wanted, and they also were able to put Cisco in a position where they can now use that company to help validate the iPhone and potentially other future products as enterprise level and serious business technologies and devices. That's what Apple wanted, and that's what they got.
And how about Cisco? Presumably they agreed to this because they got some benefit out of it. What did Cisco get out of the settlement?
Well, Cisco got exactly what Apple wanted them to get, and in a way that made Cisco think they got just what they wanted. So, all right, so what Cisco gets out of this is to ride on Apple's coattails, which sounds kind of weird when you think about how big of a company Cisco actually is. But Cisco has been having some troubles, really, keeping their name good at the consumer level. And I think that teaming up with Apple is going to add some of the, at least some perceived magic to Cisco products. And that's what they're hoping for. But basically what they get out of this is the right to let Apple use Cisco trademarks any way they want, or at least the iPhone trademark.
All right. We'll talk a little bit about the details of winners and losers, but very quickly, this settlement came very rapidly. I mean, the dispute apparently built up and came to a head and got settled in the, as far as we can tell, about 2 months. So presumably, I mean, legal conflicts, as we know, can drag on for years if people want them to. If they settled so quickly, that must mean that everyone involved had motivations to reach a settlement. So why didn't either Apple or Cisco want this to end up in court? I guess let's start with Apple. Why didn't Apple want this to end up in court?
Apple didn't want this to end up in court because they would ultimately end up putting the iPhone trademark into a weaker position, because the legal arguments they would have to use to justify taking the iPhone name would also justify everyone else using it, because what they were going to say, or at least what everyone thinks they're going to say, was that Cisco hadn't been using or defending the trademark. They let it go out to the community, and therefore Apple gets to use it. Now, that means every other company can turn around and say, well, Cisco wasn't defending it, we're going to use it too.
All right. Now, how about Cisco in this case? Why didn't they want this to end up in court?
I don't think Cisco wanted to go to court on this one from the very beginning. And the reason they didn't want to go was because they didn't want to have to try and defend the name in court. I think that the voice over IP phone product they released last fall was just a token thing to throw out there so they could say, oh, look, see what we're using the name. And I don't think their voice over IP phone device was even going to be called iPhone until it was actually done and packaged, and then they changed that. I don't think Cisco thought they were going to be able to really defend the trademark, and this is a much easier way for them to protect it because it doesn't have to get tested in court.
One of the other comments I've seen, people are saying, you know, Cisco, you have to realize Cisco had no second buyer for this trademark. If Cisco had no interest in making an iPhone, it's not like anyone else was looking to use that name. Or if there were other people looking to use that name, it is more valuable to anyone that wants to use the word iPhone if it pertains or if it reminds people of a popular Apple product. I mean, if someone else calls something the iPhone, they're going to say, oh, that's a name that they stole from Apple or that Apple would have used.
Sure. And I've heard people speculating that Cisco actually released their iPhone product only so that they could have the name and then turn around and sell it to Apple. So it wasn't even about making their own products. It was about selling the name to Apple, which wouldn't go over well in court.
It is a remarkable, yeah, you're talking about trademark squatting, essentially.
Right, right.
It is a remarkable thing to realize, if you just step back for a second and realize that one of the things that's going on here, even though Cisco trademarked the name and had a product called iPhone before Apple, apparently that little I and the word iPhone actually has, even before the product existed publicly, Apple had that that branded with the public. That is a remarkable thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they had brand recognition for a product that didn't exist. Not many companies can do that.
So let's talk a little bit about the meat and potatoes of this agreement. Why is Cisco so interested in cooperating with Apple? There's the key line here. Essentially what happens is Cisco says, oh, we're giving Apple access to this trademark, or perhaps we're giving them the trademark. And we don't know if money changed hands. If money changed hands, presumably it would have gone from Apple to Cisco. Maybe money did, or maybe it didn't. But the thing that everyone seems to have paid attention to, because it's the only thing with any substance in it in the public statement, is that they're going to cooperate on integration, particularly with respect to security. And then the other phrase, you said it from the release, consumer and enterprise communications, working on interoperability. What, now that could mean any number of things, but why, first of all, the technical question or the political question here, why is Cisco interested in doing that?
I think Cisco sees an opportunity in the market, and the opportunity that they're seeing is the one that Palm is giving them. And right now, Palm, even though they look good on paper, their products don't have that that flash and uniqueness and newness that they used to. And a lot of people are going to start looking away from the Treo type products, and they're looking for something new. And that's what Apple can do with the iPhone. Cisco wants a piece of that. And what Cisco can bring to the table is the technology, the back-end technology that you use at the enterprise level. So they can bring parts into the iPhone devices that allow them to work more efficiently and more securely at the enterprise level, which today, the iPhone that Steve Jobs showed us at Macworld, I don't think that it's a good fit at the enterprise level yet. But Cisco can help Apple make it that way.
So it seems like the building conventional wisdom here is that Cisco is interested in helping Apple bring the iPhone into the corporate realm, competing with the Treo and competing with the BlackBerry for those, you know, those hardcore enterprise level users. And Apple presumably would have some interest in leveraging Cisco's infrastructure and, as they say, know-how with the enterprise space. Is that
right?
Is that the argument here?
I think so.
All right. Yes. So there are some interesting issues with that image. I mean, if you listen, for example, John Martellaro on the TMO staff has written a lot for us about Apple's strategic predilections, that they have certain ways that they like to operate in the business world. One of them is that they tend to avoid relationships with other companies that lock them into doing certain things. So does it seem, I mean, at a minimum, if Apple were going to use Cisco to get into enterprise spaces, we shouldn't. There's no reason to expect that Apple would basically hand Cisco their technologies or hand them iPhones and say, distribute these among businesses, right? Because that seems very not Apple.
That is very not Apple. And actually, John, he has some incredible insights on the hows and whys at Apple, and he just seems to hit the head on the nail all the time. So I just love reading what he has to say about that. Now, to look at how this new world order is going, where Apple has to strike out and make deals with other companies, I think Apple has laid out the groundwork for how these deals are going to come together. And as an example, let's look at the Apple Inc. and Apple Core agreement. Apple Core basically handed the keys to their city to Apple Computer or to Apple Inc.
This is, by the way, for people following along at home, this is the lawsuit about it's the people, the Apple Core that owns the all the Beatles music, the Beatles catalog. And there's a disagreement about who can use the name Apple in, with respect to music and so forth that was settled recently.
Right, and that was settled to say that Apple Inc. now has all the trademarks to that, and Apple Core is going to license them back. How does that happen? Well, it's through the magic of the people that Apple Inc. pays really, really well to make deals like that come together. And they just did the same thing with Cisco. I mean, they got Cisco to basically just roll over and say whatever you want. And the deal they worked with Singular for the exclusive package or the exclusive deal to have the iPhone on the Singular, now AT&T networks. I mean, that was crazy. There was like three people that had seen the product before it actually was released or shown to the public. And these guys just went on faith. Sure, Apple can do it. Whatever. Give them what they want. And Apple must have some incredible negotiators to make these deals that no one else could possibly do.
And it must work at many different levels. The assumption when you read stuff in forum threads and when you hear people talking about it is that this is all Steve Jobs. One of the things you're pointing out is that there are good lawyers involved, too. I mean, in the case of the settlement, lawyers had to work it out. And so presumably there was a lot of communication between the highest levels, at least at Apple and presumably at Cisco, with the lawyers saying, look, this is what you have latitude to do. And this is, you know, they really work on it and figure out the best way to go.
Right. And okay, do you remember back in the 70s, maybe not, back in the 70s, there was this magician, his name was Doug Henning, and he kind of revived the whole let's all go see magic shows kind of thing. And he would do a magic trick, and then he'd do this big flourish and go, it's magic. That's kind of what Steve Jobs is right now. He's sort of that Doug Henning kind of magician guy, and he shows up at whatever meeting he needs to be at. He does his little trick, does his flourish, and goes, it's magic, and then leaves. And now the attorneys all roll up their sleeves and everyone negotiates out what the deal's going to be. But the magic spell has already been put in place when Steve Jobs showed up and said, this is what we're going to do.
So
I think that's how it works.
Yeah, and there is, that's probably exactly how the meeting goes, too.
Oh, sure, and I bet he wears the bell-bottoms and those bright-colored stripes, just like Doug Henning did.
All right, I want to back up a little bit and talk. There's a conspiracy theory that has developed in the last week or so, and it centers around this idea of control, the idea that Apple, and this is also based in some ways on themes that John Martellaro writes about a lot when it comes to Apple, that they tend to test the waters in a new market that they're entering into, but they test it obliquely so that it's hard for you to guess exactly what products they're working on or what strategy they're pursuing. It seems like one of the things that they get by working with Cisco, if in fact they're going to have any relationship with Cisco, is a better is an opportunity to learn more about network infrastructure. And when I say that, I mean anyone can sit down and read, you know, how the phone line network works, like how it's built. But it's more the operational stuff, the types of deals that people have cut, where the money is, who has what kind of power, who you need to make what agreements with, who the people are in control of certain things, all the operational stuff that runs the mobile phone networks. One of the thoughts that it's occurred to me just looking through stuff that has popped up over the last week. Is it possible? I want to run this by you, hear what you think. Is it possible that one of the things Apple has its eye on for the next several years is to learn more about this infrastructure of mobile phone business and then begin to work to essentially rent space on mobile phone networks, rent the airtime, so that it can run, so that it can become, as people say, a MVNO, mobile virtual network operator, where it sells you both the contract and the phone, and it controls your minutes plan and your data plan and everything, and then they just rent space on the network. Does that seem? I mean, is that possible? Should we assume that they're going to stick with Singular or other companies?
You know, Apple loves to control, because when they control, they can give you the experience they want you to have. And they don't have to make deals like Microsoft. Everything that they do has to be a deal with all these other companies. So when you finally get a product, it's been diluted down through all these other deals and negotiations. Apple doesn't like to do that. So I think that the conspiracy theories are wrong after I just said Apple wants to control everything. But here's what I think they're going for. Apple wants to learn everything they can about how the cell networks work, where the technology is going, everything that goes along with that. But instead of taking that next step where they actually sell you the cell service along with the phone, I think that's where they're going to stop, because they don't want to have the bad name that goes along with being the company that lets all your calls drop. And if you look at AT&T's earlier adventures in the cell market, they had a very bad name, because everyone said, if you want to have a cell service that doesn't work, you go to AT&T. That's the sort of thing Apple wants to avoid. But they want to know everything about how all of it works, so that when the time comes, they can say, geez, you know that Motorola or Nokia phone you're using? It sure would be more reliable on whatever your carrier is if you're using an Apple phone, because we make phones that are more robust for the different services. I think that's where Apple's going.
All right. So we'll just have to wait and see, of course.
Right.
Let's switch gears and talk a little bit about this MP3 ruling. And I don't want to spend a huge amount of time on this, because in a sense, this is a story that begins today.
Right.
Did anyone see this coming?
Well, I think Alcatel-Lucent might have, or at least this is what they wanted to see coming. I was kind of surprised that the court ruled in favor of Alcatel-Lucent, but we don't know the whole story. And the industry has looked at Fraunhofer as the de facto standard for the company that you need to go to license MP3 technology for your product, even though Bell Labs, now Alcatel-Lucent, has been involved in that process all along as well. If there was an issue with the way the licensing was going, I think we should have seen something come into the courts much earlier than 2003, when Lucent filed their case against Gateway and Dell.
Because after all, people have been using the MP3 format for years.
And companies have been licensing it for years.
Now, it also seems that, in a sense, it seems, I can imagine that people reading about this stuff at home will say, how did this happen? If Alcatel-Lucent had a problem with the licensing of MP3, why wouldn't it have just gone to Fraunhofer? Why wouldn't it have gone to the other company that was licensing this technology and said, you don't have a right to do that, we need to be doing that, or we need to be doing it together?
I have a theory on that. And my theory is that the part that we don't know much about, although I'm sure there's people out there with far more legal prowess than we have that could sort this out. I think that Microsoft was doing something with the technology in Windows that infringed on other parts of the MP3 patent or patents that Lucent was holding. And it was not related to the general MP3 encoding decoding patents that everyone has been licensing. So this is kind of like an offshoot thing that related to some more obscure technology thing that most of us aren't familiar with. I think that's what happened here.
So it sounds like what you're saying is Microsoft licensed one set of things that said you have the right to encode and decode MP3, perhaps, or you have the right to copy MP3 format, whatever it is, whatever the license right. said. There was some set of things that license said, oh, you can do these things. But there were other things that somewhere in the building of Windows Media Player or whatever, they used the MP3 format in a way that Alcatel-Lucent could say, hey, we have a patent that whatever, and your license with Fraunhofer doesn't specifically allow that, and you haven't come to us to ask about it.
That's my theory, and we'll see how that plays out. And also keep in mind that this is only the first part of the lawsuits that Alcatel-Lucent and Microsoft have to work through. There's still, I believe, 5 more patent suits that Alcatel-Lucent has in the court system right now against Microsoft.
All right, so we'll see. And like I said, because this is something that at least the general public didn't, I mean, I didn't even know this case was brewing until I saw all these news reports come up this week. I assume that this caught a lot of people by surprise this week. And because I think most people didn't really expect this ruling to come down the way it did, I suppose we'll be seeing a lot more of this as the additional rulings come out and as the appeals process works through some of the relevant questions, and we don't necessarily need to spend a lot of time on them now. Some of the relevant questions that we should all be keeping an eye on, will this affect the consumer experience of using MP3 encoders and decoders? And remember that those encoders and decoders appear in software and in devices like, say, iTunes and the iPod. Will this affect the consumer experience? Will it drive people to other formats? Will people that make MP3 encoders and decoders or software or hardware that use those things, will they start looking at other formats? Jev, in your article that you filed earlier this week, you were saying people might start using AAC. That's an open format that, right. as I understand it, you don't need to license.
Well, I believe there are some licenses that go along with that, but they don't involve Alcatel-Lucent.
which seems like the key issue. And then, of course, there's a question, will the ruling stand? So just, hey, we're at the beginning of a protracted story here. Jeff, what do you think? Is this ruling going to hold up?
I think it's not going to hold up, but I think it's going to be a long, long time before we get to that point. And by long, long time, I think we're looking at a few years of litigation here.
All right.
So, but I think that what's going to come out of it, unless there's some amazing twist that we don't know that led to the ruling that we have right now, I think it's going to go back to the courts saying, yeah, everyone has been acting in good faith by licensing their MP3 encoding and decoding technology from Fraunhofer, and that Alcatel-Lucent waited too long to try and defend these other things, and it's not going to fly.
And that seems to me, I'm going to agree with you on this prediction, even though my predicting skills are notoriously bad. Just by virtue of the industry acceptance and the trajectory over the past many years, it seems incredibly unlikely to me that this will become a showstopper for MP3 in industry.
I agree. Although I think it may actually drive some people to look to AAC as an alternative, which makes sense on many levels. It's a newer technology. It isn't going to be tied up with the same potential litigation that we might be seeing with MP3. And there's many benefits to this newer technology. We'll just see how it goes.
And that'll have to be the last word. If you have questions, comments, thoughts about the news, go ahead and shoot us an email, roundup@macobserver.com. And that is it for the Context Machine.
Okay, well then how about if we do a brief product roundup? You go first.
Ergotron announced the immediate availability of the NeoFlex Notebook Projector Lift Stand on Wednesday. It holds either a laptop computer or a projector and includes a lift and pivot design that positions a laptop display at eye level or aligns a projector with a screen. The NeoFlex fits standard laptop sizes and is priced at $80.
And Apple's iPod looks like it's found its way into the cockpit of airplanes, and is about to become a flight data recorder, more commonly known as a black box. Light aircraft maker Lopresti Speed Merchants is adding the ability to use an iPod as a flight data recorder to its Fury Piston aircraft. Now, if the iPod test with the Fury is successful, it may become a standard feature on other aircraft as well. And keep in mind, there are different types of flight recorders. Some of the black boxes are more robust than what I'm assuming this iPod version will be, and meaning it probably won't be like the black boxes that we see people looking for after a plane crash.
And Katasura Shareware announced the immediate availability of ProPhase 1.0 for Mac OS X on Thursday. ProPhase is a digital audio application that apparently provides real-time information about phase levels and mono compatibility of stereo signals. It requires Mac OS X 10.4 or higher and costs $100. And I'm actually really curious about this piece of software, so I'm going to take a look at it and let you know what I think.
Excellent, because I'm kind of excited to hear what you have to say about it. All right, Screen Time Media announced on Tuesday version 3 of its Flash-based application and widget creator, M-Projector. M-Projector version 3 adds alpha channel, window drawing, web content embedding, 7 new ActionScript classes, and more than 100 cross-platform functions. The M-Projector V3 upgrade is free for registered users and costs $200 for a new license.
And finally this week, Ambrosia Software is teaming up with Introversion Software to bring the popular PC game DEF CON to the Mac. DEF CON is an online multiplayer strategy game based on the threat of thermonuclear Armageddon. It was inspired by the 1983 movie War Games. The game should be available in March and will be priced at $25.
And that's the news. Thanks for listening to the Apple Weekly Report.
Our content, of course, is written by the fine staff of the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom for TMO. In the show notes, if you go to our show notes, macobserver.com/roundup, you can dig the Apple Weekly Report. Dig, for those of you not familiar with it, take a look at it, dig.com. It's kind of a cool service. But yeah, you can go to Dig, and they've added a podcasts section, so you can actually go and dig the Apple Weekly Report. So go ahead and check that out. There's a link to do that easily on macobserver.com/roundup at the show notes. That's all I got.
Cool. And stay subscribed.
Until next week, everyone. We'll see you online.